Welcome to the Language Access Lecture, a PGLS podcast focused on language access in K-12 schools. I'm your host, Mark Byrne.
Joining me today for a Thanksgiving edition of the Language Access Lectern is Dr. Misael Nascimento. He brings with him an incredibly distinguished career servicing multilingual families across the community. Before I go ahead and introduce him, I just want to share a few things that I am particularly thankful for. First and foremost, my family, my wonderful family, especially my wife, who is 39 weeks pregnant right now and about to give birth to our third child. Don't know if it's a boy or a girl yet, but I sure am excited to find out. So by the time this podcast airs, I will likely be a new dad. I don't know if I'll be a boy or it'll be a boy or a girl yet, so we're leaving that a surprise. But it's just one of the life's blessings that I am particularly thankful for today. Of course, I'm thankful for folks like Dr. Nascimento, all the educators that support multilingual families across the country. It's an absolute honor and privilege to advocate on your behalf. I'm also thankful for the organization that I represent in PGLS. Can you believe that they're actually paying me for this? It's incredible. Here we are. We're going to have a conversation about the past, the history, the future of supporting multilingual learners all across the country. We're going to talk a little bit about that with Dr. Nascimento today, but it is just an absolute honor to welcome you and give you the opportunity to step to the lectern for the very first time, Dr. Nascimento.
Well, thank you, Mark, for inviting me to be here. As I mentioned to you before, I've been doing this for a long time. I love it because I am an English learner. Came to the United States not knowing the language, and I appreciate the fact that now I have an opportunity to talk to people about it. So,
where are you from originally?
I'm from Brazil. I'm from Rio de Janeiro, Brazil. So, okay. And then when you come to a new country and have to like know the language, and when you don't know the language, it's pretty rough.
Oh, I so bet.
I know that part of not knowing.
Tell me a little bit about your experience coming to this country. What was that like? What were some of your initial impressions? How did language barriers impact your experience moving to the United States?
Well, I came at age 22. So when you were older, learning English is pretty rough.
Yeah.
So I had to go to college and I couldn't go. I couldn't go because I couldn't speak the language. So instead, I went to ESL courses. So that first impact, coming with an education and not being able to go to school, was very frustrating. And it is probably very frustrating to a lot of people that comes to go to, you know, to get a college degree, and then you can't. So it paused me for 2 years to go learn the language a little bit in order to go back to school. So, but I was able to then learn enough English to go back to school, and I never left school. I only left school since 1987. I left school in 2021. So I've been in school since then. But it is rough. You know, but that's the way it is. You have, English is not a choice. You have to learn it. So if you want to really succeed, you have to learn it. So I made every effort. To this day, I continue to struggle with the language. English is not an easy language to learn.
No.
As some people think it is. It's not. So it's very complicated. So, yeah, those things happen in the beginning.
What about culturally, like your experience coming to the United States? How did you feel like you were received as somebody who had challenges speaking English?
Very complicated. My first impact was I never knew that America was, I thought America was everybody's blonde, blue eyes, right?
That's sure, like it's Hollywood or something, yeah.
Yeah. So then I come here. No, it is not. It is all these people from all over the world that live here.
Yeah.
Coming from Brazil, I didn't have that. You speak Portuguese and that's it.
Right. And,
everybody speaks Portuguese. Spanish, no nothing. It's just Portuguese.
Right.
Now I come to a country that it is so diverse. so many languages and people from everywhere. So that first impact, it was fascinating, to be honest with you.
Okay.
So.
And then what was like the mix of learners within the ESL courses that you took at 22 years old? Was it mostly Spanish speakers, fellow Portuguese, or who was in the class?
From everywhere. It was I went to a free ESL class in Chicago. Lakeview Learning Center. I don't know if they still exist.
I don't know. I mean, I'm familiar with Lakeview.
I had to go back there and say thanks to them for helping me. And especially there was a teacher there, Mrs. Rivera, I never forgot her name, that kept telling me, go to college. And I'm like, whatever, I don't know what you're talking about. For me to go to university, right? To college for us in Brazil is high school.
Right.
Colegio.
That's
and
right.
I'm like, I already did that.
Yeah.
So I'm going to the university, but she helped me to keep on.
Yeah.
It's hard when you're older.
It's an amazing, it doesn't surprise me at all that you remember Miss Rivera so fondly, right? And I speak to so many educators. And, you know, recently I had the privilege of going back. So I graduated from Glenbrook South. I had the privilege of going back and meeting with some of their superintendents to talk about language access. And they were great enough to walk me through the halls and give me the opportunity to, reintroduce myself to some of my football coaches that I haven't seen for 20 years. And one of the things that they said to me that really stuck out was, Mark, people don't typically come back, we're thrilled to see you, but we don't get this type of visit very often. But the people that I chose to go see that day at Glenbrook South were incredibly impactful on my life and the trajectory that I've been able to create for myself. And, it doesn't surprise me at all that, you have those warm feelings about Miss Rivera and the impact that she had on her life, because it blows my mind how meaningful those relationships are, and then they're gone. Right.
Yeah.
It's wild. So, if you're a teacher, supporting multilingual families, just know that, we are out here and, there's incredible warmth and respect and admiration for the work that you do, not only, from myself, but from those students that you support as well. So it's cool that you shared that.
Yeah, no, I will go back there to say thanks. I will. I put that in my mind. One of these days, I'm going to go back in there and say thank you for what you do. Because a lot of times people don't think that they have that kind of impact.
Yeah.
You don't get a Brazilian that came to the United States to become a doctor in education in the United States very often.
No, it's an incredible path.
Yeah, so I'm probably one in a million there. But I need to go back there and thank them for the work they do, because they probably don't know.
Yeah, you are a true one percenter, that's for sure.
Yeah, so they go teaching, but they don't know the impact that they are having in all these people throughout the year. So,
about all the families that you've impacted.
True.
And when you can go back, it's wonderful that she was so impactful for you, but, there's 7,000 multilingual learners within Rockford Public Schools. And, yep. I've been there, I've been on site, I've been all over that community. I see the impact you're making. I see, the growth and development of the family liaisons that get out into the communities and the work that you've done to shape that over your career. So, don't forget, it's great to celebrate, your success as an educator, but let's not, diminish the great work that you've done and the impact that she had, kind of that butterfly effect, if you will, on so many other people. So, it's incredible the reach that, Ms. Rivera has.
Yeah, I know. And then talking about the 7,000 English learners that I work with, it is such a humble experience. I can never express to anybody how it is that, working in a large, school district, that's 29,000 students. And I was a part of that, and it was such a privilege to be there, to help a little bit, knowing that those 7,000, 10, 20, 50, 30 years down the road will be successful, for what we did there. I was not alone. I had a lot of support, but it was really rewarding. And what a humble experience for me to be able to be there and be a part of what was happening. So yeah, no, it was really great, really great.
Yeah. So, you know, you brought up, you know, the people that have helped you, you know, build out, you know, those support systems at Rockford Public Schools. Talk to me a little bit about the strategy that went into that progress. You know, when you start, I mean, you were at Rockford Public Schools for 12 years. Okay. Yeah. 8 years. Okay. My math is off, but you know, talk to me about the strategy, right? Because I mean, we have a lot of listeners who are multilingual program directors, probably not at a district as large as Rockford Public Schools. You know, of course that's the third largest school district in the state of Illinois. And certainly among the most diverse, but talk to me a little bit about the strategy that went into, you know, developing, you know, programs to support those students.
Yeah. Because of my background, I was a program designer. So various districts. So when I came to Rockford, I brought that with me. You know, getting in there and knowing what was in place already. And then I just kept on building on what we had. The translation department, the data department, the family support group, you know, hiring the teachers, creating a ESL program. When I started there, there was ESL classes in some schools. There are 41 schools and so many students without receiving the proper services. And how to create those things. So I came to the superintendent and I said, how about having ESL classes in every school? It's 41 schools. He said, you're going to need a lot of teachers. I said, yes, but they need the language. And he said, then go ahead and do it.
Wow.
So that kind of support I received right away is when people believe what you do changes everything. They didn't need to trust me. So I had to gain that.
Yeah.
And they start believing in what I was doing and trying to create. So I went ahead and started hiring teachers. We had 13 ESL teachers when I arrived. Okay. And by the time I left, we had 38 of them.
Wow.
So ESL was provided in every building across the district. So those are the things that became, they saw it. And when you see it, then you believe it.
Okay.
Then we start creating more bilingual programs, and then we start creating dual language programs. But it took a little bit of time for them to trust that I knew what I was doing, right?
Yeah.
Because I came with that experience and expertise, and I gave everything that I had to that district.
Oh yeah.
So those are the things that you know, it takes time to get. So
well, it's amazing that you got the support of the superintendent, right? That's a big sticker. And of course, you know, I've met Aaron Jarrett over the years. Great leader. You know, he's been there for a while, so you know, very exciting to see.
And my boss, Duncan Mark, and I don't know if you met her, Heidi Detman. She was my boss.
Okay.
She was very, very supportive. Always behind, like trying to make sure that, you know, if whatever I need to go do it, you know. So
talk to me a little bit about building that support, getting that trust, you know, like when somebody who's sitting in your shoes, they want to bring this information, you know, to a school superintendent.
Mm-hmm.
How do you recommend they go about doing that?
It takes time. First, be patient. And then show people that you know what you're doing. You know, because you're talking about taxpayers' money here, right?
Yeah.
You don't want to just spend money to spend money. You want to create things that are effective and cost effective. So then people see that, yeah, we can get there. It's going to take a little bit of time, but mm-hmm. be patient and let people see that you have every good intention to get there and that you are taking steps to get there. Are you going to make mistakes? Of course you're going to make mistakes, but at least you keep on moving. You keep on going. And don't be afraid of doing something different. You know, you can get into a district and do nothing. And that's not good for anybody. So yeah. be creative. Go to a conference. Go to a workshop. Learn something. Bring it in. Try it. And if you don't know, not because I have a company, though, call an expert. Call somebody. Yeah. And then sit with them. I superintendent called me the other day. He said, can you keep coming to my district, right? So I do that. As you said, they pay me to do this thing, right? But that's the expertise that I have. I go there and I sit with their team and I explain. And then I walk away because they're in the classrooms. They are the directors. They got to figure it out what's best for their district. So that first step is be patient and learn and try. And don't be afraid of trying. If you don't try, you don't know if it's going to work.
That's good advice. It is tough to be patient. That's tough.
I know.
Not easy.
Yeah, I heard the other day somebody said that, according to statistics and research, people learn English in 7 years. And I said, some do. If every student came to us in kindergarten, yes, true. But they don't come in kindergarten. They come in middle school. They come in high school. They come at 22 years old.
Yeah.
And it takes a long time to learn the language. It is not to speak English. It's to be proficient in English. And that's the distinction. And people don't know that.
Unpack that for me. Talk to me more about that.
Yeah, if speaking English is speaking English. You know, people can, you speak English so well. Or give a pen and a paper, they cannot write a sentence. No offense, but it's true. Yeah. It is not just speaking. It's just the listening component. It is the writing component. There's a reading component. And there's really a comprehension component. Can you talk to somebody over the phone and understand what they're saying? And a lot of people can't. And they speak English.
And so, really putting English into practice.
Correct. So those are the things. So and when I hear, my grandparents came to America and they learn English by themselves. Well, true and not true. Or they learn to speak the languages. They probably had a supervisor or a foreman or whoever that spoke their native language and they found a job to survive.
Yeah.
That's not what we want today. No. What we want today is to teach English through content that our students will then leave and be successful. They can go to jobs, they can go to a college or go to a career that we created as educators. It's not just they learn English by themselves. We don't want that. We want them to be really proficient. Can they read and write and listen and speaking and comprehend? Yes. If they know all those five domains, we did our job. If they don't, we have a problem.
Okay. That's interesting. Now, that segues me into a question that I had been wanting to ask you. So, you know, of course, you know, your career spans, 20, 30, 40 years, right? Mm-hmm. Talk to me about the evolution or what has changed over that time in terms of educating multilingual learners. I'd imagine many things, but talk to me.
A lot. And, those days back then when you had books that, my name is Juan. I'm 13 years old. I came from Guatemala and, my dad, those days are gone. We teach English through content, through social studies, through science, through math, through the language of arts, right? So take the arts of language itself and then teach English. So that's what we do today. Those days of, you go to class and you learn a little bit of English every day, hopefully we'll end up learning. We cannot do that anymore. We have to be intentional. And we have to do the right. Today, I had a conversation with a teacher from a high school, and she said, I'm working with four students, teaching them because they don't know anything. They're like kindergartners.
Yeah.
Think about that, right? So she's teaching them, B-A-B-A, things of that nature, right?
Yeah.
The sound, the letter sounds, the, you know, airport. What we think is simple. Well, for them in high school, it's not.
I got a five-year-old. That's not simple.
It's right?
Yeah.
So what she's doing is what we want teachers to do, to take the content of English language arts and then teach English as a second language. And that is a skill that it needs to be taught. ESL teachers are amazing people to do those things. And then general education teachers could learn short instruction, and then they can do the same, right? So you go to college, and you don't expect a whole bunch of people from other countries to come to your classroom. And sometimes you don't know how to teach them. But yeah, there are strategies that can help general education teachers to do what this teacher is doing. She's a general education teacher.
Oh, wow.
She's not an ESL teacher, but she's doing those things, so she's helping those four. And then I said to her, yeah, four is awesome. Four.
Yeah.
Do it for the four.
So. Well worth it, right? It's incredible, like the commitment that, you know, of course she has a full classroom, right? Probably teaching multiple classes, you know, throughout her day. And that she will sit down and seek out resources and your expertise to support just four learners, you know, to me, that's special. You know, that's why the world of education is a special place to work, for sure.
I 100% agree with that.
Yeah.
You know, I said the other day to a friend, you know, not everybody can be a teacher.
No.
It's a calling. It's not just a job.
Absolutely.
You know, it is not just a profession. I go around talking because that's what I do. And I tell people that, you know, you are called to do this. Some people are born, no kidding, to teach. And they are so good at it. And a lot of times we don't even appreciate them. It's a lot of work to be a teacher, especially these days. It's very complicated to be a teacher these days. I talk to teachers on a daily basis. I had a meeting with four teachers. It was four teachers yesterday, middle school.
Okay.
And I sat there and I was listening to them talking. And, you know, it was only a 30-minute meeting, but at least it gave me an opportunity to tell them, you know, thank you for what you do.
Absolutely.
Because they don't hear that enough.
No. Not even close. So what advice do you have for general education teachers supporting multilingual learners?
Be patient. Again, right? It hurts me, and it happens a lot, that we expect the kids that came from whatever country they came from to learn English overnight. That's not going to happen. You know, only God knows what condition they came to us. Some well-educated.
Yeah.
Others, no education whatsoever. They cannot even read or write in their own native language. And then now they're in your classroom as a gen ed teacher. And you can't just keep on teaching like they are learning anything, because they are not.
Right.
So we have to figure it out then. It's more work for me to do. Yes, it is.
Yeah.
The truth, yes, it is. So take those, like this teacher, those four. While she's spending 15 minutes with four. But they are learning, and they're excited now to learn. So if you can get that excitement going, they will learn. You know, if you get them in elementary, great. If you get them in middle school, it's more complicated. If you get them in high school, you only have 4 years.
Yeah.
And, you know, just be patient with them. Try to find those extra things that can support them. There are today, in these days, there are extra programs for enrichment. So go plug them in. And sometimes I remember going to a high school, and they said, what do we do here? I said, you know, instead of having one period of ESL class, why not have two periods of ESL class? Because if they go to science or social studies or math and they don't know the language, they're not going to do anything. Yeah. So it'd be more productive to have them in an extra ESL class. The principal said, can you help me how to design that? Because it's a scheduling nightmare, he said. I said, okay, let's do that. And he was able to do it. So for the very new to the country, they had a double period of ESL in high school because it was like 45 minutes. Now the kids have 90 minutes of ESL. So that helps. Those are the things that do help. And for the gen ed teachers in elementary and middle school, they have those kids there, elementary especially, you have them for the whole day.
Okay.
You know, what do I do? So work with your ESL teacher, work with your bilingual teacher, talk to your director of bilingual programs, find those extra programs that exist. I don't know, you know, there are various of, and then plug them in. Give your gen ed teacher a chance to teach the gen ed kids and help the English learners. There's always a way to do that. You got to be creative.
Okay. All right. So one thing that you touched on, and I got to think it's got to be, you know, one of the most satisfying moments in an educator's life is when you see that spark, right? When you see that excitement in the student for learning. And I mean, it's got to be frustrated for an English learner like you were describing, right? You get one class of, you know, EL, and then you're off to science and you're off to math, and it's, you know, perhaps over your head, not only, you know, the content, but perhaps also the language. So, you know, talk to me a little bit about strategies for creating that spark, right? For a general education teacher to really ignite that flame within, you know, their students and bring out the best of them. Because that's got to be so satisfying.
Yeah, it's the little things that you do. I was invited to go teach a math class at the middle school.
Okay.
One math class, eighth grade. And they had 29 students in eighth grade math. 12 of them English learners, Spanish speakers.
Okay.
Okay, so I grouped them. And the teacher didn't know what do I do here, right? So for me, they speak Spanish, grouping them. First, I found out what level of English they were. Some knew a little bit of English.
Okay, that's good.
Others knew nothing. I mean, no English. Like, they couldn't speak the language at all. Okay, but they know Spanish. So okay. I tap into that because I could, because I speak the language. Okay, fine. For me, it works. He said, but I don't speak Spanish. And I said, then you group them in such a way that they're not going to be teaching what you're teaching, but at least get an explanation of what's going on. And I said, let's talk to the principal, see if we can find, they had a paraprofessional who was a Spanish speaker. And I said, maybe she can come to that class and then help with those groups.
Oh, wow.
So instead of you being like, oh my God, what do I do here? Tapping into those resources that are available, and then bring, if you have somebody that can come and help for the 45 minutes, and then group them in such a way that they can work together. And then as a teacher, you walk around making sure that they are doing what they're supposed to. And again, be patient with them. They are very polite. They're like smiling at you, and they have no idea you're talking about. So they will say, hey, I don't know this in Spanish, right, to me. And then I had an opportunity then to go by them and explain in Spanish what my direction was in English. So they were able to do it. The little things that the teachers do, those are the things that clicks. Now they're excited to learn something. If they learn one little thing, then they will be excited to come back. But the friend that I was talking about, she was saying, I was one student that told another student that told another student that, oh, Mrs. Whatever can help us. Well, she said, she talked to the principal, said, can I take 15 minutes of, true story, 15 minutes of my lunch and help these four?
That's awesome. And lunch is sacred time in schools, right?
And then the principal said, I'm never going to tell you don't go teach, right? And he said, let's find a space during the day for you to do that instead of using your lunch, right?
Yeah,
they did. They figured that out. So those are the things that excite students. And when they click, they do it. They will do whatever you want. And they will try their hardest to please the teacher who believe in them, you know.
So. Okay. And I'll never forget that teacher, that's for sure.
Truth, right? That makes a difference.
That's special. Yeah, it really is. Well, that's good. I think that's a really good insight there and really good advice, for any teachers listening to the podcast. That's really cool. Now, of course, you know, the pandemic that occurred back in 2020, I'd imagine. And of course, you know, I know firsthand, I was, you know, working in the education space, for a company that, you know, modeled student data. So I had an opportunity to see firsthand the impact that pandemic had on students across, you know, the entire state. A lot of learning loss, a lot of opportunity for recovery. But how specifically did that pandemic and putting kids out of school impact the multilingual community at Rockford Public Schools, for example?
I think it impacted everyone.
Of course. Of
course. Impacted the teachers, impacting the teaching, impacted everything. Those kids, I personally had 2 middle schoolers at that time. So, you know, my middle schooler now is a senior. She's graduating.
Your own kids?
My own kids.
Okay, got you.
So, and as an educator, for us was hard because we were home. Yeah. But we are educators. Then we can teach them and find the space to teach them. There was not a lot of teaching going on.
Yeah.
Because how much can you teach, right? They are far away from you. You're on the computer. Who wants to sit in a computer for 6-8 hours a day? Nobody want to do that. As educators, we found this space and we create this space for them to learn. And then think about those who didn't have parents who are educators. So there was not a whole lot going on. So they suffer that. So it brought them back quite a bit. So okay. To gain that back is going to take a little bit. So instead of beating ourselves, oh my God, there's this learning, whatever, they never learn. Okay. Forget about those, because there's nothing we can do about now.
Yeah.
Let's focus on the future. Let's focus on what we are doing right now and keep on moving. It was unfortunate what happened, but we can't fix that. You know, it's not our fault, educators, that they lost something.
Right.
Because they were not in front of us for us to teach them more, right? So let's concentrate on what is ahead of us and then try to minimize that loss, because they lost some.
Oh, yeah.
It's a fact.
Yeah.
But let's keep on moving and think of what can we do to not accelerate, but at least to gain a little bit of what they lost, because they did. English learners especially. And we have a whole bunch of those who already graduated, and we don't have them. So there's really not a whole lot we can do if you think about it. Yeah, so my thing to teachers today is like, you know, oh, yeah, they lost. Well, you know, I have these kids from the pandemic. They are in middle school and high school, some of them right now.
Yeah.
And we can see it. Teachers can see it, that, yeah, there's
even now.
Yeah.
4 years removed from the pandemic, or 3 years removed from the pandemic.
Mm-hmm. So there is something, and we all know what it is. So the teachers are struggling with that, doing the best they can to try to gain some, but it's not going to happen overnight. So it's going to take a little bit. But, you know, my talk to teachers out there is stop thinking about that. There's nothing you could do. It really happened. We were all there. I was there. You were there. Our kids were there. Yeah. Let's focus on the future and see what we can do to gain a little bit of what we lost. So
I do think the industry as a whole responded to that crisis very well. In terms of not making excuses, being solutions oriented, You know, obviously you're going from, you know, teaching 5 days in a school to trying to figure out, you know, how to acquire PPE or, mm-hmm. you know, getting students access to lab. I mean, it's just a laptops or tablets or, you know, some ways for them to be connected is a totally reactive situation that educators were put in. But, you know, as, you know, just as a human, right, who's been just observing, you know, different industries and their response to the pandemic, I appreciate how, one, you know, solutions oriented the industry was. But then also, you know, the requirement or the necessity to turn the page, right, to get back to the business of teaching. And I think it just speaks to the resiliency of teachers and educators globally.
But, you know, in our case, we had 29,000 students to take care of. You know, talking about laptops for everyone, make sure that they had internet connection. My superintendent was very active on doing those things. He had a lot of support. We had really like people helping him get us there. We all there trying to support as much as we could. It was our response to 29,000 students was the best we could do. And we really did the best we could. If it was a smaller district, we'd probably have a better chance. For when you're large, it's very complicated. But the way we try to maneuver, I had, you know, 6,000 whatever many kids had those days to teach them English as a second language. Our ESL teachers became general education teachers. Because we needed teachers now. So all of those took place, and it was complicated to navigate. But we went through it. I think we learned a lesson to be more prepared and more proactive. And that's hope that that will never happen in our lifetime. We don't see those things happening, you know.
Well, yeah, that's one thing that I hope does continue in the aftermath of the pandemic, an emphasis on internet for all kids, an emphasis on, you know, free and free lunch for all kids, right? Your laptops for all kids. I mean, these are important tools for learning, each and every one of them. So, you know, I hope that's something that continues to resonate across the country. And it's important to get students access to the basic necessities that they need to be successful in the classroom or at home. Yeah. Right. So that's very neat. Neat. So, you know, it is the day before Thanksgiving, right? Talk to me, you know, as we were reflecting on your career and your experiences, talk to me about some things that, you know, of course, and we talked about Ms. Rivera, right? Talk to me about some things that, you know, fill your heart with gratitude as we think about, you know, this Thanksgiving season.
That's a good one. I'm a foreigner, and I got an opportunity to go to school here. I went to college. I have 6 degrees. They're in my wall there. I went to the military. I have my degrees from the military. I went to naval school.
Okay.
I became a naval officer in the United States. I became a Marine officer in the United States.
Thank you for your service.
So those are the things that you don't imagine a poor kid from Brazil to do. I don't go around the country telling people, you know, my testimony. Everybody has a story to tell. Mm-hmm. But I'm always grateful to this country for what the country has done for me. And people say, why join the military? Just to give a little bit back. You know, I worked for 10 years with Marines because I have a duty to give back a little bit. Why mm-hmm. education? Because I have to give back a little bit. Why being a director of bilingual programs? Because I have to give back a little bit. Because I'm thankful. On a daily basis, in my office, I had 18 people in my office, and then I was in the 7th floor. You know where Rockford, big building. I was in the 7th floor, and every time I look outside at the city, I'm from Rio in Rockford, Illinois. So if you live a life of purpose, then you can look out and then be thankful. You know, I believe in God, and I believe there's a God out there that put me in a place to do that job at that time. So I was in Rockford, Illinois, working with 7,000 English learners for a place that God put me there for a purpose.
Absolutely.
So, and that's all, you know, that's what I'm thankful for. You know, my family, the support of my wife, you know, through, you know, going to school all these years, you know, all of those, or going to a war zone, or, you know, going to Japan for some problem to solve. So, but those supports I had in place. So I'm very grateful for being here, right? And have an opportunity. And now I train teachers, you know. I teach classes that support classroom teachers. I do it because I'm grateful. I could just sit back and do nothing.
Right.
But I can't.
No, not when you have so much to give.
Right. How can I do that? So I go around and I train teachers and I talk to teachers because I have the experience and I have to give it. And I believe that the more I give, the more I will have. It's Thanksgiving season, and I have a lot to be thankful for. I'm an American, I'm a Brazilian, and I love this country. I really, truly love this country for what the country has done for me, and making me able now to give it back. And I can do that. I have a lot to be thankful for.
Oh my goodness, yes, you do. Amazing. You have an amazing story, an amazing journey, and it's inspiring that you could rest on your laurels, right? You could rest on the body of work and all that you've done to give back just a little bit, but you continue to give more and more and more. And I think that's an exciting component of, you know, your offerings at Camino Education. And I'd love to talk to you a little bit about that work and, perhaps a little bit different running your own business versus, you know, running a bilingual department. But tell me about that experience, that entrepreneurial experience that you've had here since leaving Rockford Public Schools. And talk to me about what that experience has been like and, you know, introduce our listeners, you know, a little bit to the offerings that you guys have.
Yeah, no, I was about to retire and I'm like, you know, thinking about what am I going to do? And then my daughter said, How can you become a doctor in education with all the experience and you're not going to do anything? What, you're going to go work at Home Depot? And I said,
is that what she said?
Yeah. And I'm like, she said, you can't do that.
Yeah.
And I said, honey, you're right. So that's why. And then I said, I talked to my friend. He's my lawyer. He said, no, put something together. Go teach. Because I do this speaking, right? I go around and I speak. I've been a lot, you know, this. I've been a lot of conferences and workshops and whatever. I do those.
Yeah.
But I know, to dedicate myself to go around and then motivate people. I was in a church about 3 weeks ago because I'm a preacher. I preach.
Oh, wow.
So I'm a pastor. So I was there preaching, thinking, we have to remember where we came from and where we are right now. And then we have to be grateful for all the what God has given to us so we can give it back, right? So that's what Camino is all about. So I started by myself, and then a friend of mine joined me. She does the TBE part of it. And then another friend of mine, he joined us. He does the ESL portion of it. And then another friend of mine, she's from my town. She's going to do the gen ed part of it. And then I have a friend that does a DEI, the diversity inclusion part of it. So it keeps growing and growing by itself. I'm not going crazy out there to advertise like crazy because I don't want to work full time again because I already did that for 46 years.
Yeah.
But I want to continue to go around and then talk and then, and like my friend in February, I'm going to go see him. In April, we have a ESL thing already for next school year.
Already booking up.
Yeah, so I can be, you know, it can get very busy very fast. And that is, I want to go slow, But it's growing fast.
Yeah.
And I hope I can find ways to go help a district here and a district there. So, it's just sharing our expertise. And that's what Camino is all about.
How did you select those that you've chosen to partner with for, the DEI conversations, the general ed conversations? How did you come in contact with those folks? And, obviously, 30-year career in education, right? Yeah. And I'd imagine you rub elbows with some great people. But talk to me a little bit about that.
I know people and people know me.
So
it was like, I heard that you're doing this, blah, blah. And like, yes, I am. How can I join?
All right. They were coming to you, not the other way around.
Yeah, I was at a football game at Glenbar North High School here in Carroll Stream. And my friend came and said, your wife was talking to me about your company. And I'm like, yeah. She said, you know that I present for general education, shelter instruction. And I'm like, oh, okay. She said, how can I join? I'm like, well, we'll talk more. Because she lives in my neighborhood, we got a chance to talk. She said, I want to be a part of it. So that's the way. I'm not out there, advertising and employing people. Okay. There are good people out there, trust me, that do great work. And I appreciate what they do. I know a lot of them. But here we are now. Trying to support school districts. I have superintendents who are friends, who know what I do, and they know the quality of things that I do, and the quality of the people that I have around me now. I'm talking about great, great educators who have been doing this for a long time. So the fact that they join me on this effort, we will be able to help a lot. And I told, to my friends, it takes time. Going back to be patient. The fact that
I laugh because it's one of my least favorite. Patience is a virtue, but it's an overrated virtue sometimes, at least when you're, from my perspective. But it is refreshing and important to reinforce that for people, myself included, right? It's okay to be patient sometimes. Good things come to those who wait. It certainly resonates with me. Don't think that I'm being cheeky when I laugh at you continuing to say to be patient, but those who know me within the organization here at PGLS know that, I find that patience is a virtue that is overrated, but, I do appreciate it. And it's good to hear. And it's good to
know. I've been doing my videos and my YouTube videos, about education and, teachers and all of those, I do those, and I go around, and people invite me. But again, I retired because I worked so much. I started working when I was 14, right?
Yeah.
So I never stopped. So I have an opportunity now to take a step back, look at myself, my own self, my own health. This time in my life is a time to share and share and share. But I don't want to be crazy busy anymore.
I understand.
And then if people contact me, it's no longer me going, oh, I need to do this and I need to do that. Or they say, hey, oh, can you come here and sit with my team? Yes, I do that. Those are the things that I'm doing now. And Camino Ed is doing that now.
Do you have a specific framework for the professional development offerings that you put out there?
I do. For myself, I do the program designs. If you have a dual language or bilingual or ESL program that you don't know, what do we do here, right?
Yeah.
Like the meeting they're going to have in February. What can you help my teachers with the newcomers? Okay, I personally go in there and I sit with them when we put a plan together. So that is the part that I do. And I'm a keynote speaker, right? So I go out and I speak. It's a 45 minutes, 1 hour. That's different. But those are the two things that I do. And I do the leadership because leadership, we have to create leaders, right?
Yeah.
So those classes, those things that I do myself and then I know how to do those. The other ones, like the ESL courses and the TBE courses, and all of those, somebody else will take care of that. I can't do all by myself. I can't. And I don't want that either.
No, no.
But with the supports that I have now, I learned this. You have to learn to delegate.
Yeah.
And trust that the people that it's going out are doing their best. So I've learned that. I work in Rockford. You can talk to the people in Rockford. They're going to tell you. I always told them, go do your job. Are you being paid to do it? Do to the best of your ability. I'm not going to be after you, but do your job and do it right. If you need my help, I'll be there to help you. And I'm going to trust that you're going to do your job well. So I could go to a conference or a workshop and not be in the office for 2-3 days, knowing that they knew what they had to do. So it's
good leadership. That's it. Right? Empower your people. Support them. Have their back.
Those are the things that I go around teaching, that you have to learn to trust your people, and they have to learn to trust you. When trust exists, you're good to go. If trust is not there, you're dead. That's it. You're dead. Nobody's going to believe you. So.
Well, and I think that's true, you know, in administrative leadership, but also teaching in general, right? You know, kids have to trust you. They got to know that you love them. You got to know that, you know, you want what's best for them. And you got to know that you're going to show up every day and hold them accountable and continue to push them forward. And that's the job, right? So
that is correct.
Yeah. It's amazing work that you've done, you know, throughout your career. And I think it's amazing work that you're going to continue to do. When you think about Camino Ed, do you have a mantra or a mission statement that you've established?
Oh, yes. You know, I tell people, this is how I live my life. You got to focus because you need to know where you're going.
Yeah.
And you got to persevere. So go to a patient will get you there. You know, and I'm reminded of Moses walking for 40 years. You know where you're going. But it's going to take time to get there. Be patient. You'll get there. But here it is. This is the secret. Always, always be prepared for what is yet to come. That is faith. So focus, persevere, and always be prepared. That's how I live my life by. I put even that in if you see my flyers from my company, it says at the bottom, focus, persevere, and always be prepared for what is yet to come. Because if you're not ready, and when it shows up, you're not going to do it.
Well, yeah, we've seen that with the pandemic. You know, the world is a very uncertain place right now. The world of education is a very uncertain place right now, and what that might look like moving forward, especially as it relates to, you know, supporting multilingual students more broadly across the country. It's a fascinating time. And, you know, I think across the country, there are so many educators that fit the mold, you know, that you are built into, right? Because like you said, there is a calling, right? This is a calling. Working in education is a calling. Mm-hmm. And, you know, everybody's got their story, and yours is a fascinating one, and one that needs, and I'm so glad that we could sit down and have this conversation today, because I take such great pride in promoting language access and celebrating champions for language access. And, you know, you're at the top of the heap in terms of, you know, folks that I've talked to that have really demonstrated, you know, those, you know, key principles and have just, you know, just done outstanding work. So I think it's incredible, you know, after giving so much to so many, the fact that you continue to, you know, keep that conversation going and support, you know, our school leaders is amazing. And, you know, I could talk to you for another hour about, you know, faith and family and, you know, what's next at Camino Ed. Maybe I'll get you an opportunity to step to the lectern for a second time. But, you know, before I let you go, I just want to thank you again for your service, not only to our great country, but to, you know, the students there all across, you know, Northern Illinois and Rockford and, you know, with the other stops that you've made, whether it be McHenry or Oswego, some of the other stops along the way. But thank you again, you know, for everything you've done. I've appreciated so much the opportunity to kind of get to know you and hear about your story. And, you know, certainly we'll be, you know, cheering and, you know, celebrating your success at Camino Education. So, you know, thank you so much. It's been wonderful to talk to you. And, you know, hopefully we get a chance to do it again soon sometime.
Well, thank you, Mark, very much. And happy Thanksgiving to you, to your family. And tomorrow, maybe tomorrow you have a new family.
Oh, my goodness. Yeah, I've been waiting. I've been waiting. Like I said, patience is not my thing. So this has been a challenging last couple of weeks here for my wife. But me, too. I think everyone should feel badly for me. I've been through it. So yeah. That's not true. My wife's amazing. We're going to get this thing done. But right, thank you. Thank you, thank you, thank you.
Thank you for this opportunity, and have a great one, okay?
You too. Happy Thanksgiving. Bye.